Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million. Well, I'd buy you a house.
Well, don't play Section Jacks. I'm Tamao. We got Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 14. NASDAQ futures down 86. We had a little bit of an update yesterday. We seems like there definitely is a bid under the market. S&P was up 32, NASDAQ up 95. But we seem to want to go down. There's a bid there. I think a lot of it has to do with the Fed, and I think somewhat of the perceived truce between the president and Powell. And Powell going to do what Trump seems to want him to do, which he's been doing for years anyway. But you know, the constant increase in money into the system, it keeps wanting to drive asset prices up, which is good for people that have assets, good for clients, good for a lot of listeners, I'm sure. So that's not a bad thing, I suppose. It's just a question of when all that's going to, if it ever matches up, and maybe it won't. So it hasn't for a long time, so I wouldn't think it's going to happen today. Kevin, are you with us?
Good morning. Yes, I am.
I bet I know where what our president's doing right now.
What's that?
Well, Wells Fargo downgrades Nike to equal weight on a looming mild recession. He needs to call them up and say, you can't say that. Just like he did with Amazon yesterday.
Okay.
Just saying. It's certainly one of the reasons why we elected him. The idea was Amazon was going to put...
What did he say about Amazon yesterday?
Amazon was going to... The rumor was... There's some... What's the name of this place? Temu or somebody who brings over the Chinese company that is tries
one
to
of, one of their suppliers.
No, this is a company that tries to sell stuff here.
Okay, an Amazon Marketplace seller then.
No, I think they're a competitor. The Amazon, some Chinese. I never heard of them.
No, but, I think they have a relationship with Amazon.
Well, they might, but they were going to put on the price of a whatever it is you're buying. They were planning on saying there what the tariff impact was on that particular item. So essentially saying, this item costs $50. By the way, we paid $8 in tariffs, or $5, or whatever it is. And the rumor got out that Amazon was going to do the same thing. So evidently, Trump personally called Bezos and said, I don't want you doing that. It's a lack of respect and something else, or whatever words he used. And I'm sitting there going, really? So I guess... We must have a team of people in the White House that are doing nothing but trying to find people to tell the truth that we don't want to hear or something. I don't heard anything like that.
Actually, funny you should bring that up, because Rubio just did an interview. They're dismantling something that was located in the State Department, a department that was originally created to counter some of the... I don't have the right wording for it, but basically to counter some propaganda for foreign companies or foreign countries, from adversarial countries, and what they did is it morphed over the years into something that was used to squelch American citizens.
Imagine that, and
when they When the new administration was elected, they moved it. They had to track this down, because they moved it to a different name, a different department, trying to hide it out so it wouldn't get killed, and they tracked it down and they're killing it now. So it's interesting that that this is just how government operates now, is it's all about squelching your opposition.
Well, one man's propaganda is another man's truth, right?
I suppose you could say it that way.
Well, one man's freedom fighter is another man's terrorist.
No, I don't necessarily think that's the case, though. I think that another man, the truth is just not something that in many quarters that anybody wants out.
Well, it is sort of interesting to me as I think back. I mean, when you've been around a while, we're not big on. We're not big on the truth. This is a bipartisan thing, really. Anywhere, I seem to recall, Kevin, when I used to, buy gas for like less than a buck. Boy, this is a fading memory, but the reason what put me onto this, well, the thing with Trump yesterday sort of did, but just out of curiosity, why, since say in Illinois, the gas tax is up to, I think it's like 92 cents, something like that, with the sales tax added on. Maybe 91, don't hold me to the actual penny, but it's up there. Because the state's now up to what? 32, and the federal something, whatever. And I used to remember you pulled up to a gas station, and on the side of the pump, there'd be like a, I won't say a poster, but a thing you could read that said, be aware that you are paying, 45 cents or 35 cents, whatever the hell it was at the time, in gas taxes on every gallon. Just as a way to remind somebody, if you're bitching at the dollar a gallon, that it's not all going to the station guy.
It's not my fault.
Yeah, it's not necessarily it's not his fault. You think I'm making 80 cents on this gallon of gas, you're out of your mind, because I got to pay these idiots 30 of the buck or something. And you never see anything like that anymore. Is that because they feel they won't get a permit, or they won't get, somebody will come down on them for their retail taxes, or they'll audit them? I mean, why are people just afraid of any kind of truth now, it seems? I mean, you never see. I was stunned yesterday when I went to look at these gas taxes. Why doesn't somebody, how many people do you think that bitch about the prices and bitch about Biden or Trump or whoever you're bitching about on gas prices when they go to the pump and, oh, man, it's $3.17 versus, if you quiz 90% of, they're not dumb people, how many people that are morons on this issue? If you just walked up to the Myers on Sunday morning, by the way, Susie, by the way, Joe, what do you think of the gas prices? Man, they're up 20%, 20 cents since last week. Do you know how much you're out of this $3.27 is tax? Well, I have no idea. But I know I'm getting gouged by the oil companies. Well, maybe you're not getting gouged by the oil companies. Hey, it is stunning to me that in this age of information, the age of where just about everybody, I think, has, got a certain smarts about them, these simple questions, if you ask people, they have no friggin' idea, Kevin. Yet they'll bitch and moan, oh, man, you believe gas is up 20%, it must have been that bleep Biden, or look what this Trump's doing. They have no idea that, like, 80 or 90 cents of the mess is going to taxes. And right now, you look at the...
Although, as it rises and falls, and again, it can have, it can relate to the president, to policies, to administrations, and so on, to some degree, and to some degree, it's not controllable in the slightest. The amount is either fixed or it's a fixed percentage. So the rises and falls are not all on the state. It's just how much of the price of it, the end price of it, is attributable to the state and federal taxes.
Well, I get that part.
In other words, if it goes up 50 cents, it's not because somebody. It's seldom because somebody raised the state gas tax and caused it to go up that much. That isn't the case. Although every once in a while you do get a state that makes a significant bump in gasoline tax,
which was Illinois last year.
Yeah,
but here,
so that does happen. Indiana did the same thing a couple of years ago. They raised the gas taxes
but
too.
It's got to be the only thing on earth. State and local sales taxes are on the other taxes. I'm not saying that the right and wrong on it, Kevin, or whether why they got there and whatever. I mean, we both know that. Just since we opened up the conversation here, Illinois state gas tax 47 cents a gallon. This is the same state that can't figure out how to tax electric vehicles. They pay nothing for road use. Well, Indiana, I think, has found a solution. I don't know what it is, but how do you leave that entire group of people and not paying anything? Is that because, you know, Pritzker likes electric cars, or he owns one, or what? I don't know.
Probably because, you know, electric cars are going to solve all of our climate issues.
Yeah.
And even though they're not, and so yes, there are policy aspects to this. I mean, we had the same thing. You know, Buttigieg used to go out all the time talking about how cheap it is to operate them, so it was worth the extra expense of buying them because it was so cheap to operate them because you didn't have to buy gasoline for them.
You didn't have to pay taxes.
As if electricity is free. I'm sure there was some part of the initiative that said, geez, we're not going to tax this stuff.
Well, we hear it.
In fact, we subsubsidized it for a really long time.
Without a doubt.
Less so now, but we did.
Well, it's kind of interesting that when you ask people a question, it's not just, you know, people on the show, because I like to ask questions to ruffle people a little bit because it challenges their brain and mind too. But it's really kind of stunning that you can't really get anybody to stay on topic. I mean, it's I read something in the LaCroix Digest, right, which I read, and the guy's right, and these are individual people, right? And some of them, you can just tell by the amount of work they've done, that's something you sort of have to believe. Like if somebody writes in a baseball question, some guy writes his half a page article regarding, you know, shortstops in 1894, you figure this guy is somewhat misguided and he spends his whole life on the research, but he's probably, if he's going to do that, he's probably correct, right? I mean, why would you lie about some guy anyway? Not that somebody wouldn't. But I just mentioned it like a Sunday dinner. My brother's and my nephew's a big electric guy advocate, right? You know, he's one of these guys nice kid, but you know, you can't, he's got it all figured out, which most people appear to these days. How come I change my mind all the time when I hear some new news? Does that make me a flip-flopper or an idiot, or maybe I just didn't know everything yesterday?
No, that's not what makes you an idiot, Tom.
Okay, that's a lot of things. So I say something about this guy. It was the article was about what, you know, is it, what's the maintenance on a Tesla versus another car? And the guy writes back, he said, well, you know, I've owned a Tesla for 10 years now, and seemingly every year my cost of maintenance is about the same on the Tesla as my friends with their regular cars in my other car. And now at the end of 10 years, I need this new battery that's 10,500 pounds, which is whatever. It's, what would that be, $14,000, $13,000? He goes, so I'm going to say that my experience, it has been more. And now I'm stuck with this. Do I sell this thing to somebody for next to nothing because it needs a battery? Or do I plunk, you know, 10,500 pounds in a thing when it's 10 years old? He goes, I don't know what I'm going to do. It was essentially said, I'm just still deciding. So I mentioned this to my, you know, at Sunday dinner. Oh, I can't believe that. What do you mean you can't believe it? I can't believe it. There's less moving parts. How could it possibly be the same? I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of more electric motors. I'm just saying, the guy said his experience has been this. Now, whether the motors burned out or something, the light bulbs weren't as good or the seats sucked, I don't know. I said, well, no, it can't be right. What do you mean it can't be right? I mean, you want to find the guy in Britain and tell him how wrong he is? I mean, what do you want to do? Why was the guy write that article? Did he have that much of an edge against Elon Musk or Trump or anybody or Biden or Obama, which put the thing in the first place? Can't anybody who disagrees with you can't possibly be right? You know, I mean, yesterday, I mean, Hal, the guy's a brilliant guy. I said to him, you know, Hal, at the end of the day, the estimates from the administration are that they're going to collect $600 billion in taxes. And I said, well, that's if it's an incredibly regressive tax, and it's hitting everybody, even people are buying the cheap crap from China because they can't afford the other crap. and where's that money going to come from? I mean, it's going to come from people here. I mean, some of it, I mean, you and I are capable of putting it on the board and say, okay, maybe the person in China or wherever else is going to lower their price because they want to remain somewhat competitive, assuming they are. There's a product here. Now, maybe they eat a little bit of it in some esoteric way on the graph, but the fact is, the $600 bill might not be totally to your pocketbook when you buy the item, okay, because the people on the other end might lower their prices. But then again, you might get stuck in the other cheek of your behind by people here realizing the stuff coming in is now more expensive and they raise their prices. So this is really a triple-edged sword, and you really don't know which edge you're going to get stuck with until it actually happens. And every product's different. Every country is different. Because I can't believe that that's...
I want to mention something, though, as you say that. One of the things, and this is a common assumption that I hear all the time, well, tariffs are going up, everybody's going to have to raise their prices to match that. And while it is true that everybody is going to say, I have a higher cost structure, and therefore I have to see how much of that I can get in prices, most people don't do cost plus pricing. It's priced to some kind of value that the market is going to dictate on it. And just because your cost structure goes up doesn't mean you can get paid more for it.
There's at least three variables in here. And you just talked about one I just mentioned. The question is, who's your competition? Now, the simplest one, the one I wrote a paper on in college, was what if the U.S. raised taxes on imported cars? A simple one, right? So that, because things were simple in those days, the Mercedeses,
which they actually did.
Well, yeah, which they did. So, matter of fact, it was an import quota on Japanese cars, wasn't there? At one point.
Yeah, they went quotas. They didn't raise taxes per se. They went quota with it.
So say you raised, say a Mercedes cost 50 and a Cadillac cost 30, 35, whatever number you want to put on there. So all of a sudden you put a $5,000 tariff on Mercedes. Well, somebody's paying $5,000 when it comes through the port. So there's $5,000 there on the cost side that was never there before. Now, two things can happen there. Mercedes can say, well, gee, now I'm not competitive to Cadillac. We'll drop the price on our end $1,000 or $2,000 to get us somewhat. So now that drops your tariff from $5,000 to what? $4,700 or something? Somewhere in there. And so they're going to eat a little bit, maybe. They're going to eat a little bit. Now, on this end, the dealer might eat a little bit. Okay? He might. But somebody somewhere is getting this $5,000 check. That part's assured, right? But now Cadillac at 35 might go, wow, we were well-priced being 35 when the Mercedes is 50. Because let's say the market thinks that the Mercedes is worth $15,000 more than us. And now it looks to me like this Mercedes, instead of being, say it's not 55, Kevin, say it's 4350, or 5350 or 5300, something like that. Looks to me like we can raise the price of the Cadillac. I'm saying 53,000. We can raise the price of the Cadillac to 38, and we're still 15 down, right? So you can't assume the people on this end.
But did raising the price of the Cadillac make the Buick more?
General Motors. I'm saying, but every
the old expression: if you want to face a cannibal, it's probably better than being in the mirror.
I tried to have a very complicated discussion with three variables. The first thing you did was introduce variable four.
Yeah, I know.
You're never getting around to the fact.
Which is exactly why this is not some kind of
No. Yeah, here's the thing that's not going away. There's $5,000 more in the mess that somebody's paying. And someplace, somewhere, somebody's going to eat that, and that somebody is you.
I mean, well, somebody is often me.
Yeah. I'm saying you could say well,
might be me.
Now, does that now?
My point is that people like to talk about if you make iPhones in the United States, they're going to cost you $2,500 or $3,000. Oh, baloney! That's just not true because nobody's going to pay that.
Well, I get it, and then you get on the chain and you say, okay, what about the Chevy Impala, man? Is that really, at some point, if the Mercedes is 90,000 and the Impala is 20, somebody's going to say, gee, I'll buy the tricked out Impala. Yeah, this, like I said, I tried to keep it to three variables, and there's many more. But the bottom line is somebody's writing the $5,000 check to the government that wasn't before. The government's ahead five, and the rest of us are falling where we may. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, it may be. Now, the other interesting thing, and I told you this would happen, is that there are going to be some people in the automotive, and I know they've relaxed a lot of the things related to automotive.
Except we don't know what it was, and we don't know what's relaxed. It's just all it's flow.
So, yeah. No, I don't want to have that argument. What I was going to say is there's going to be somebody who goes out and says, I'm going to seize the moment and try and do some attractive pricing that's going to get me more market share. And, you know, Ford led with that because they said, we'll do employee pricing for everybody on selected models. But and I can't remember who it was, but I always thought it would be one of the Korean automakers that did it, and it was. It might have been Hyundai, who is now out saying, we're lowering our prices on everything, not just selected models, which is their shot over the bow at Ford. There are people that are going to that have a different view on this moment, and that is, if I'm producing enough domestically in the United States, and if I can, if my own cost structure is in good stead, I'm going to be able to go out and take advantage of this and grab some market share by not raising my prices and, in fact, lowering them. And that doesn't surprise me at all.
All right. So, again, the if you and I were in class teaching this, every time somebody would mention something like that, we'd need another blackboard. Now, when Hyundai, there's a price. Now, when Ford says you're going to get employee pricing, name me one person on earth that knows what in God's name that means.
It means that the sticker price is lower, although you...
Oh, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
Well, it's below dealer cost. Let me put it that way.
How can anything be below dealer cost when these guys have these massive operations?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
Well, if dealer cost...
There is a published dealer price that, you know, that they charge the dealers. Now, if you're a volume dealer, you're going to get a different price.
But, I'd believe that published price like I believe I'm a jockey today.
Okay, but then the published price for the employee pricing is also published, and it's lower than the dealer price.
I would say that the...
If you want to quibble over how that goes, be my guest, but if you're saying you don't know it, then...
But, I mean, nothing is more complicated.
Probably just shut down the conversation, because then it's not a knowable number.
No, what I'm talking about is nothing is more complicated than how a car gets priced. Because it's embedded in the system is this list versus real price that is designed where if you come in with a used car where you owe more than the car is worth, you can pay more and still have it below list, right? So in the process, if Hyundai says we're lowering our prices, they could very well be. Now, to you and I, Kevin, who you teach this stuff and I've learned this stuff, that means to us, to you and me, that Hyundai price over from there to here of the Hyundai, instead of being $25,000 subject to a, say, a 10% tariff, we're going to drop our prices right out of the gate to $23,500. That's what you and I, if we went through the math, that's what Hyundai is saying. Now, if they say somewhere along the line, we're still going to be under list, even though the tariffs, the list is 10% over or 12% over, but now all of a sudden you got to pay list, but we haven't raised the prices. Well, okay, now that's a whole different story, isn't it? During COVID, when they couldn't get cars, people were paying $10,000 over list. Okay, well, the price from Oldsmobile, wow, the price of Canada.
For a while, you were paying very cheap prices on used cars.
Yeah.
Until the new car prices went up so much. And the reason for that was that all the rental car companies dumped their fleets on the market because they weren't renting them and they wanted to get their cash back, and they knew that when things came back that they would be that those cars would be out of the model year and they wouldn't be able to rent them out anyways.
So, well, yeah, well they just puked those things out. But we got to go to break here, Kevin. But at the end of the day, say Hyundai is taking an aggressive approach, and I think the employee discount is, I think it actually is, if somebody proves they're a Ford employee, that the Ford dealer gets like a $1,500 rebate or something for that car.
Yeah, they do. They definitely do.
Yeah. So they're saying that, no, Ford's saying we're going to give everybody, the dealer is going to get a $1,500 rebate on everything they sell, basically, which is a way to go against it. You're exactly right. But I mean, every single one, you got to kind of work through the detail, right, of what exactly they're saying and to who. But if they say we're not raising prices and they leave their price and the list price the same, and as long as the price to the dealer plus the tariff is under the list price, they can confidently say we never raise prices. Yet your price is going to be a lot higher, right? Depends on how the wording is with these guys. They're pretty clever.
Yeah, they're good at it, but it gets back to the original statement. Okay, who's going to pay this, you or me? And the answer to that is it sort of depends, because some people are going to see the moment of the event of the tariffs differently than others. There are some who just see it as a real opportunity now to go get market share, and market share is everything when it comes to commodity products.
Well, it's at least a real opportunity to write commercials acting like you're helping people, whether you are or you aren't.
Okay.
Which I agree with you, by the way. And some companies are going to be very aggressive. Some companies might actually, they might be right on the razor's edge with a foreign car, and the foreign car is now a little higher. They figure, God, if I lower mine even a little, I might be able to steal some market share. But still, the thing that can't be debated, Hal started in with, I don't think the number is really going to be $600 billion. I go, Hal, that's not your job. I mean, that's the estimate. By the way, I happen to agree with Hal. The first month, or the first 2 weeks, the numbers have missed miserably the administration's targets from what I've read. So why
do you suppose that is?
Because I think they were blundering
it down.
Well, but let's say, for instance, the number's not 600, it's 400. But then again, when they come out with the 600, how do you not know that they got somebody as smart as Hal in the administration when the number started out as 8, and then somebody said, well, we're not really going to get 8, we're probably only going to get 6. But anyway, they're going to get something, and the something is a tax. No matter what, right?
Yeah, okay.
And, I mean, last year the tax from tariffs, I believe, was like $67 billion, because we've had tariffs for a while and stuff. I mean, for like forever on some stuff. This year, the estimate is $650 billion, which is by far the largest tax increase I believe we've ever had in this country. Not even close. And it's not being marketed like that at all. I mean, is it? And the intention appears to be to lower some of the corporate and progressive taxes that are in the $2 trillion range. So I don't know that if you put it that way in front of the population, if you give them a 20-minute lecture on how this tax upfall works, it might take longer than 20 minutes, does anybody really want to trade off what's left of the progressive taxes for regressive taxes, which we've done before? We did that under the Reagan administration. We traded off progressive taxes, which were too high, by the way, so I certainly agreed with that, with regressive taxes. Is that what people want to do now, if they knew that's what was happening? I don't know, Kevin. If you explained to everybody that, where do you think the vote comes down? I don't know that it does come down the way these guys think it's coming down.
Well, and you do like to ask the question about, is this what you voted for?
Well, I mean, nobody knows what anybody votes for.
By the way, I would very much argue that the answer is yes. It's exactly what most voters voted for.
To do what?
It just about everything on the agenda as is.
I absolutely disagree with that. People are single-issue voters. People voted because the girl got her broken nose by the boy playing volleyball.
No, that's they voted. That is not. If you want to take a break, let's talk about that when you get back.
I'm just,
because it isn't about the broken nose. And by the way, that girl that's been on TV with it had a concussion, and she's still not right months later because of it.
I think it's horrible
about that. But aside from that, that is not the issue. The issue that's a piece of a broader issue that is substantial, and it's showing up throughout the education system, not just in competitions in high school and college.
When we come back, let's talk about something we disagree with. By the way, I agree with everything you think about on the education. I'm more on your side than you are in regard to what's happened. We voted against wherever the hell the Democrats were taking us. Right?
Socially and all social issues? Absolutely.
Absolutely. SP Futures down 17, NASDAQ Futures down 101. And by the way, the Democrats still haven't figured that out. Which I can't understand.
It's crazy. Don't you think that's nutty?
It's right in front of their face. I don't get it. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Low back stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 15. NASDAQ Futures down 94. We've been down a lot of these mornings, but we come right back up during the day. There's a bidder underneath. Here's a headline that maybe Kevin can explain. Etsy shares pop on revenue beat as company says it is staying nimble to tariff uncertainty. How did these guys? I don't buy any stuff on a lot of stuff on these things, but how did these guys? Kevin put this question there. We'll talk about it either today or Friday. How did these guys essentially take over? eBay's still around, but how did they get so good in the last 10 years instead of eBay? I don't know how that works. Anyway, we have over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 205.6%. They've been pretty strong. Hang Seng up 111.5%. Shanghai down 7. Shanghai's been like a non-event here. Hang Seng's like doing all the trade. Asia-Pacific markets trade mixed as investors parse key regional data, whatever that means. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 143.6%, FTSE up 18.2%, CAC around up 49.6%. European markets rise amidst earnings flurry. Healthcare stocks jump as firms shrug off tariffs. Gee, healthcare stocks going up, they can charge more. I'm shocked. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.15%. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.46%. We have oil down another 44 cents, under 60 bucks, 59.98. Wow, that's really something. Brent down 65 cents, 63.60. Natural gas down 5 cents, 3.32. RBOB down a penny, 2.06. I got news for you. We're not going to drill baby drill at this price, but it's a nice price, even though RBOB's kind of going the other way. Gold down 43 bucks. Gold begin clobbered here, 32.89. Silver down a dollar, 32.26. Wow, I just put a little silver spread on yesterday. That won't be very good. Good thing it wasn't much of a big spread. Foreign exchange, a dollar. Still, it's a 1.138, so slightly higher than yesterday against the pound, or the euro. And the pound is 133.6, pretty much unchanged. Crypto, down 197, still at a pretty lofty 95,158. We have Trump's kid yesterday talking about how banks better get it together. He's all in on the cryptos. Isn't that something? Andrew, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
All right, it is 6:41 here in Chicago. It is April 30th. And just a little bit of sports here. The Cubs won over the Pirates. Big blowout here, 9-0. Over Chicago weather, it is currently... Let's see. Page is freezing on me. There we go. It is currently 47 degrees. We're going to have a high of 61 today. It's going to be cooler throughout the day, and we're going to have a slight chance of showers as well. But that's going to be a pretty low chance. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 63 degrees. They're going to get plenty of sun today as they have a high of 90 degrees. And finally, for Chicago traffic, things are a lot heavier on the outbound than they are on the inbound right now. If you're heading on the outbound Kennedy, it's going to take you about 40 minutes to get to the Jane Byrne, O'Hare from the Jane Byrne interchange. And if you're on the Stevenson, it's going to take you about 44 minutes to get you from the Dan Ryan to I-355. All right, that's all I got. Back to you.
Hey, Kevin, we probably should, since the facts are sort of still coming in, if they are coming in, on this Kentucky LLC thing, we probably should put that off maybe to Friday. We'll get maybe a good lose version tomorrow. Is the university going to be the LLC's got the principals, right? Are they going to be one of the, like, the overriding principal of that LLC? Are they going to run it, or do you have any idea who the participants are going to be?
I don't know who the overriding principal. I am sure the university is not going to want to lose control of it. However, there's been a lot of discussion about getting private equity into college athletics, and this is just a mechanism for funneling some of that money into college athletics, I think. I'm expecting to see more of this.
Where do you think they think they're going? I have a feeling I know where your opinion is. I'm kind of in the middle. I hope you're right, because for those that don't know Kevin's opinion, is Kevin still thinks that no matter what you do, you gotta pay attention to stuff like Title IX and whatever. I don't know about that, Kevin. Do you think this LLC is...
The way around it is that you have to make them employees.
No, I'm talking...
That construct solves a lot of their problems, but it creates a whole bunch of new ones.
I got a different question. Are you... Who has to direct this now for-profit organization to pay to fly the women's fencing team from UCLA to Rutgers for a fencing match? And they say... I'm not making any money on that. Screw that, or the guy's swimming team or something.
It could happen.
How could they just say we're not doing that? Why would I pay somebody's tuition when they're not bringing me a dime?
They could just leave that with the university and say the LLC is for football, is for selected sports.
Why? But it seems to be all. Why? In other words, why wouldn't they feel that they could just, we're not doing those sports? Screw it. Why would they have to even do them? Those are club sports. You want to play, you play.
Well, they can make them club sports.
They
could make that, exactly what they have long claimed all of it to be, and that's just it's an extracurricular activity that is a club sport. And I think there are some sports right now, NCAA sports, that are kind of that construct where they may be a little bigger time. Than a lot of things, but not, they aren't totally there. And by that I mean, take lacrosse. More men's lacrosse than women's lacrosse. It's a very popular sport at the high school level, and so you got a lot of people playing it. But if I were to go, I don't know if there's lacrosse on campus this weekend or not. But if it's a nice day and there's a lacrosse match, I'll go over there. They have a little stadium with general admission seating. And then a berm on the other side where a lot of students like to go hang out, and you might see a few thousand people in the at the game, and it's just a nice outing, and tickets are maybe $5 or something like that each, so it's not expensive. I think that's the college athletics that is the story they've always wanted to tell, the one that's not true. But some of those sports operate like that, and it's it makes it kind of a combination of extracurricular activity, but something that is tied to the school, builds some school loyalty. The fans like to attend, and so on. That's nothing like what the football experience is, or even the basketball experience.
One of the excuses for years has been, we notice football is we're making a lot of money there, but oh, by the way, it pays for all the rest of the stuff, even intramurals, which I don't know if it did or didn't, but. And how God only knows how Notre Dame moves the money around. I don't even want to go into that quagmire. But now, if it's Kevin and Chiefs LLC, I'm not doing that. I mean, let me ask you this.
Now you start looking at basically you're talking about a product portfolio, and you're saying let's look at it product by product and say which one should we be doing and which one should we not be doing.
Well, if the dollar becomes the god, which I think it has at Notre Dame, even though they don't think it has. If dollar becomes the god, I'm pretty good at this, Kevin, and so are you. I can tell you, just by giving me the numbers, I'll tell you what decisions are going to be made. Intramurals, if these kids don't want to show up anyway, screw that. I mean, a question, because I don't know. We knew the late Joe Lepley, nice guy, was my age, he was from the East, these are all the Eastern dudes. He was on the lacrosse club team, and I never even saw a lacrosse game. The thought of me playing lacrosse would be like, you played football, basketball, baseball. That's what you played, right? I mean, we were so knucklehead in our day.
I didn't play basketball when I was young. I played hockey.
Well, there you go. You could have played. Well, see, down south side, there were no such thing as a rink. So anyway, we didn't have the. You guys, we were with the rich north side guys. Anyway, but now.
And you all were slippery without the ice.
Yeah, no, yes, we were. So if you were on the rugby team, I think the rugby guys, if they had a game with John Carroll, they piled in six guys' cars and they drove to Cleveland, right? They didn't get a dime from the university, did they?
No.
Did they get something?
I am sure they had funding from the athletic department. There was funding for club sports. It just wasn't going to cover the entire cost.
But it wasn't. I don't think they even got a bus. Maybe there might have been a trainer or something. But
I doubt it. Yeah, I doubt it.
I there might have been something for. Well, you had to have a field, and maybe they paid for the refs or something. They probably gave you a place to play, which costs, right? You had to have a lacrosse field someplace. So there probably was somewhat of a budget, but I don't think they paid the coach, did they? And I don't think if somebody got hurt, I don't think they paid the hospital bill.
I have no idea. Were they self-coached? Did they have a coach?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think if somebody got hurt.
My coach was an employee of the university. And I don't know the answer to that, honestly.
Well, everybody was covered medical wise, right? In school. I mean, they paid insurance for everybody. So I guess if you broke your ankle playing rugby, it was covered by just the general insurance, I would guess, right? I would think that, if we'd have broken an ankle at the rack, I think it would have been covered, right? Either by the school or our parents?
Well, you may recall, we always got those student insurance policies.
Yeah.
They were really cheap.
But I'm saying, right now, if you decide you're going down this dollar road, and I'm contributing to this LLC, and it's a for-profit organization, I'm one of the principals, I'm Big Daddy Warbucks, and I'm 10% of this thing, I'm the outside guy, and I go to the board meeting, and I go, hey, it looks to me like we lost 200 grand on women's swimming. Screw women's swimming. They look nice in a bathing suit, but I'm not paying for that. It's not what I'm here for. I'm here to make money on football and basketball. The other stuff, I don't give a shit about. I mean, how do you not have that conversation? Or somebody will bring it up.
Like I said, now you have a product mix. And just like you would with any other mix of products that your company offers, you're going to evaluate them on a case-by-case basis and decide which ones get investment dollars and which ones don't.
All right, hey, page three, Paul Harvey. I don't know if you had a chance. We got 10 minutes. Conversation yesterday with Kenny. Every day I keep popping this up here because nobody seems... Because everybody now is alluding to this at least minor recession. Now, whether it's ever counted as one, because we're putting money in versus... I think most people feel that whatever recession, a minor recession, feels like, it's starting to feel like. I mean, it's a little harder to get jobs, a little harder to get this and that. Expenses seem to be getting higher. There's a little bit of something, which, you know, which happens. I mean, it happens. Doesn't matter who's president or whatever, recession sort of happened. Now, when you pour money into the system, it's hard to count it because nominally it always looks like things are getting, they have an actual decrease in the nominal or the actual gross domestic product when you have a pretty good inflation. Unless you're honest with the deflator, you can show there's never been a recession. I mean, in COVID, what, they had two quarters, Kevin, when it should have been what, four, five? I mean, whatever. So you have this thing where you're pouring money in a little bit. They're back up to 5.1% a month, which is right where they've been through Obama, through Trump 1. We got worse through Trump 1 and Biden because of the COVID. But it's basically been on this increase higher than growth that impacts individuals poorly because your wages don't go up as much, and it increases owners of things, houses, and stocks better. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked that well for commercial real estate, has it, Kevin? Matter of fact, that group is like, what about us? And now, Kenny was saying yesterday, and I think he's totally accurate, that if this goes on for another 2, 3, 4, 10 years, it probably is going to be good for the stock market. Yet, if we continue to have real inflation, if you believe that, of 4, 4.5, 5, and real wage growth at 2, 2.5, you're sinking the rest of your population sort of the same way we've done for 20-some years. And the numbers show that. It's not just me. Where does that collide, Kevin? I mean, it's happened once before very violently during the 20s, and the collision was the crash and the Depression. Well, nobody wants that, right? I mean, good Lord. I mean, where does somebody either wisen up on the government side and say, look, the guys that got dough and the guys who own baseball teams and football teams, they're not going to go up 10% a year for the next 4 years or 8 years. They're going to go up, you know, whatever, if at all. We're going to at least bring this down to a dull roar to give people a chance to catch up. I still think that that is possible. Maybe I'm just, you know, seeing the thing as half full. Carl and I think Russell and a couple others that maybe know more about economics than me are thinking it's really not possible, that there's going to have to be a violent end to it. Violent meaning money-wise. What do you think? I mean, this is not a political question.
Or not money-wise.
What?
Or not money-wise.
Well, yeah, I don't even want to go there. I mean, I don't even want to talk about that.
Well, I don't either, and I don't, you know, nobody wants to see that happen, but at the same time, what are we really looking at here is, you know, inequities don't last forever. You know, when you polarize the citizens and we're being polarized in many directions. It's not just the haves and the have-nots. It's, you know, we have people that are doing it by race, by gender, by, you know, disadvantaged groups. Remind me on Friday to talk about an old book from, I think, the 80s called A House Divided. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't know if I read it, but I remember it.
Yeah, and, you know, it sort of laid out the different political ideologies, I think it had six main political ideologies, and I think the constituencies have changed, but it also got into things like, you know, what is the, you know, the holy book of it. So, you know, like if you were if you were what you would call now the classical libertarian, it would be Wealth of Nations. If you were a religious, at the time it was more religious conservatives, and now you would see, I don't even know, because there's also a liberal religious, that would be the main, literary work is the Bible, and so on, and you can go through and identify all those, and who are the heroes of that. I think it's an interesting way, and I'll go back and try and pull together what, you know, what those six groups were, and we can probably step through them and decide, you know, they're so different today. If you're in favor of government as the big problem solver, then that gives you one. But you know, as it is now, we have really just lined up people against each other, and you know what, you know, we see the violence coming up, because I mean, look at just a simple example. If you paint Trump and the MAGA people as Nazis, and then Elon Musk shifts over and plays for them, then it becomes fair game to go attack Tesla owners and Tesla dealerships.
Which, yeah, I don't get that at all. You know, I'm not like that.
And so, yeah. What I'm saying is that's violence. So we are partway there. This is what divisiveness is about. Now, economically speaking, I really believe that the only real way to restore any kind of equity into the system is to bring, and it really should focus around manufacturing, because making stuff is where the, you know, is where the skills and the high paying jobs are. That and some, a lot of IT and, you know, those areas. We have to stop giving all that stuff to overseas companies, and in many cases it's strategic for the United States, you know, the best example being drugs. You know, we can't have all our medicine made overseas, otherwise, you know, we're subject to being cut off on there, so it's risky. Another one would be airlines, but we see now we're down to one airline and we're protecting the hell out of that industry, and we see the inefficiencies that creates. So, you know, it's not an easy act to balance, but it is something where we have to have employment that people want. And this sort of ties back to what you were discussing. There's a lot of aspects.
Hey, Ricky, do me a favor. Sorry, Kevin.
Problems with immigration,
Ricky, write this down, Ricky. We don't want to forget this on Friday.
Yeah. One of the problems with, you know, so much illegal immigration, and you were talking yesterday about, you know, how people have been assimilated. How many of them have been assimilated into paying submarket rates and being forced to work overtime and not get paid for it, because their employers are holding over their heads the fact that they could be deported if they were turned in? Because I know that happens.
Well, sure it does.
And so now, you know, that's an economic aspect, that even though we say people are getting jobs and they're integrated and they're getting on a bus and going to work every day, that's still not, you know, that still has its implications, right along with, you know, the social implications of it, where we're talking about study that had, you know, like 30% of all women who were brought, you know, transported into the United States using the drug cartels, who were the main transporters, had suffered a sexual assault along the way. The numbers of children who, you know, died along the way, those kinds of things are just really, it's more than saying, are those 60,000 people in Chicago a problem? It's, there's a whole big aspect to this, and that's why I push back so hard on the single issue voters. I think you hear these examples that people cite that are kind of simple, and they don't encompass the whole issue there, and the whole issue is really big and really important.
The we're on two chunks of the chessboard here. I agree with you on the single issue voter part, except for the fact that people vote that way. My dentist, this is how many years ago?
I know. You told that story like six times in the last week, so I know.
I know, but you vote for one item and something else happens and all of a sudden you're pissed. Right?
Yeah, but don't trivialize the item as relatively small.
No, it isn't. It absolutely is not. I mean, but I think, Kevin, let me lob this one out there. Economically, and I really, since Jan and I were...
And it all ties, because... If you start talking about the gender related issues, and you start talking about immigration, and these pieces go into a policy mindset that doesn't separate them very well, that they really are. So, you know, and I think Hal mentioned this when we talk about immigration. It was either Hal yesterday or it was Kenny. You know, I'm all for immigration. I think if people want to come here and they work and they are, you know, can contribute, I just want it to be done legally. I want our legal immigration system to be able to handle scale as needed. And I really, really want employers to be forced to treat immigrant workers ethically and responsibly. And then if the and if the market rate for pay is not suppressed because people are working off the books and getting paid less, then those jobs are already become more attractive to the people who are sitting on the couch now.
Kevin, there's nothing that you say that can be debated, I don't believe, except crap changes. And if we're talking Ellis Island, would I love the idea that people who want to come here for whatever, they like the weather. The guy saying Casablanca, I came for the waters. The guy, what do you mean? Water? Casablanca is a desert. Yeah, well, I was misinformed. I mean, I get all that, but in today's world, I would love to have everybody coming across the border be able to do eighth grade work. I would love them. I don't want anybody to be taken advantage of. You and I are absolutely in the same. The thing I think some of us are forgetting is all of a sudden in the last 10 or 15 years, we have to open our eyes a little bit in the person who says everybody should come here legally with a system. They also should know that in the last 15 years or 10 or whatever the hell it is, some wars that we were somewhat of a part of, matter of fact, probably a big part of, have jostled, 7 million people that aren't in their homeland anymore? They have no place to go? Yeah, you gotta have eighth grade education to get here. You can't come in through. I get all that. But what everybody's supposed to hang around in Jordan till we decide to take them? I mean, how many refugees does that poor guy have? Half his country, for God's sake.
Okay, and we can, as part of immigration policy, we can talk about refugees from war. That doesn't account for the 20 million people who got into this country in the last four years.
I would,
and most of them are not accounted for.
First of all, I don't believe the 20 million. I don't believe anything these people say. But that's another issue. But I'm going to say Venezuela is the reason
why there was such a fight over asking about citizenship on the last round of the census. And the big reason is because nobody wanted the real number.
I'd love to have the real number, but I don't believe Trump's group, and I don't believe some liberal group either. They might say there's 50 people. I know there's more than 50. I mean, how do you describe Venezuela? Is that a war? What is that? The disaster down there. I mean, I don't. Would you want to live there?
No.
I'm saying I don't even know what we've seen, and
how would I describe it? Self-inflicted wound, but
not by the guy in the street.
Responsibility to solve problems everywhere in the world. That's another debate.
That's another problem. Yeah,
clearly, Trump has come out on the side of we don't want to do endless wars, and we want to solve the ones we have, and we're just not going to get engaged long term in some of these places. That's not historical policy in the United States. We just tend to move from one involvement to the next.
It was for a while. Anyway, we got a dash. We'll talk more on Friday. SP futures not on 20. NASDAQ futures down 125. He also got a kick up on Friday. This quarterback that ended up, he ditched out in Tennessee. Now he's at UCLA. What's the guy's name?
I can't remember. Carl knows it well because he's at Tennessee. But yeah, he was getting, he had $2 million for pay. He said, "No, I want $4 million." They said, "Well, good luck." Cut him loose, and he's getting, I think, $1.2 million, $1.4 million. He's getting less from UCLA,
but he's
and paying California state taxes, which are much higher.
Had he signed the letter of intent at Tennessee? Do you know?
He was already their quarterback.
Oh, okay. He wasn't.
He was already there.
I thought he was a recruit.
He was their quarterback last year, and he was the ninth ranked quarterback in the SEC, and he wanted $4 million to stay at Tennessee.
What happened to Sanders' kid? What did he go, fifth round or something?
And he went. That's a great one. I know you're trying to go to break there. We can talk
about that. No, we don't. We can go right to you. We went to.
Okay, well, no, I just...
Guys, I got to go. I got a meeting on campus, so I got to head out.
Go, Kevin, right. Go!
Don't, you don't want to miss the coffee and cookies. Get there early, Kevin.
No, this is Zoom. This is me. Russell will appreciate this. This is the initial walkthrough on a course I'm developing.
Oh, that's fun.
You see, at the CBOE, when you had interminable meetings, at least you got the world's best cookies.
Yeah, we don't get that anymore.
I can stop and bring donuts for myself.
That's right. Yeah, that's what DoorDash is for.
See ya.
Yeah.
Yeah, go.
Do you remember?
So, hey, all right, you want to talk about the Sanders thing, or you want to talk about the I'm not going to play, or whatever that guy's last name was? That's the Tennessee guy.
Okay,
his
but
name
now,
starts I am something.
Right. But my question is.
Mm-hmm. I know what Sanders kid did. I did a video with another professor on it.
Did he just interview really bad with people?
That's an understatement. Apparently, in the NFL draft, they will they will bring you in for an interview, and they'll cue up some of your bad plays, and ask the player to critique their bad play or go, you know, can you tell us exactly, you know, why it wasn't executed the way it should be. There are only three teams that really needed first round quarterbacks, and in two of those interviews he basically said, maybe I'm not the quarterback for you.
You're kidding?
No, I'm not.
Why couldn't you say it? I read it wrong.
Dr. Ademiak and I did a video on interview mistakes and how Sanders made a lot of them. He and my understanding is there were some draft rooms where the owners had specifically said, we don't even want his name on our board. We do not want that guy on our team.
Well, the answer is I made a bad read, and I studied films for the next 3 weeks, and I haven't made that read again bad. Isn't that the answer?
And there are other little things that they do. And then he refused to do part of the combine.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he didn't do the combine. I remember that.
Well, no, he did the combine. See, this is the thing. This is what I just freaking hate about, you know, the internet is, you know, it says, well, he didn't participate in the combine. He did. There are three aspects of the combine. He didn't do the workout part. He didn't do where they, you know, he didn't do like the physical workout part, so they made an estimate on that one. But there are three aspects to it, and he didn't do one of them. He felt like his body of work should speak for itself or some BS like that. But, and everybody, you know, I hear a lot of blame thrown at Deion, but, you know, his son's a 23-year-old man. At some point, you got to look around and see what the real world is like. Maybe he's never had to live in the real world, but, you know, he really did damage himself tremendously.
Well, how pissed off is his agent if he paid for all that?
He doesn't really have an agent. His father was kind of acting as his agent. His brother went undrafted, Shiloh Sanders, and signed as an undrafted free agent with the Tampa Bay. But over the weekend, his brother actually got a real agent. He's like, I see what's going on here. He joked that he fired his dad as his agent, but he did get the other Sanders kid that didn't get drafted at all. But this is just a textbook for kids coming out of college or young people that are interviewing for jobs. This is it's practically a textbook. Here's what you don't do. You don't show up and act like you're God's gift. I had tons of those when I was in the hedge fund industry, and I would interview people. You know, people that would show up, come in and, you know, tell me I was wrong, or tell me that, you know, like challenge me when I'm interviewing them and I'm the one with the job and they're not. You know, I'm not saying it's a power thing. I'm not saying that I'm any smarter than they were, but, you know, I'm the one that had the power to hire or not hire them. And I had a handful of interviews that I was just like, nobody's going to hire this kid the way they're acting in interviews.
Yeah. Well, some,
and I try to get that across. And then the other thing is, I have a former intern that was interviewing at Goldman, and when they got the offer, they actually said, well, let me write. It was to be a junior analyst for a senior sell side analyst. And they said, well, I want to talk to my parents a little bit about the offer and I'll get back to you. And they said, we're going to rescind the offer right now. If you're not grown up enough to do things without consulting your parents, you're really not grown up enough to be working here.
I don't know if I buy that one. Getting some advice isn't a bad idea.
No, I do buy that one. I do buy that one from someone who is in a place where if I don't cut it off right up front, I will start hearing from parents about grades. And I know people at some of the big investment banks that have heard from parents about bonuses. It's a different generation than you and I are used to, but people a little bit younger than ourselves really do take it upon themselves to ingratiate themselves in every aspect of their children's lives.
Yeah, I got in, and
I've got a daughter staring at me right now. Like, are you freaking crazy?
Well, it's I had
yeah,
a,
there it was. She's sitting at the breakfast table. Well, sorry,
my brother gets out of school, and Dan, of course, was already at his CPA before he before he even graduated. Right, plus he ran this big thing down at Notre Dame, where you know they'd raise money for charity or something, and he ran it, and he made all kinds of money, and which nobody'd ever done before. So he was a real hot item. Not to mention he's a real bright guy.
Course, yeah,
he didn't tell him how he made all the money, right? Mm-hmm. He bought something like 200 or 300 cases of beer.
That's great, and resold.
Well, no, it gets better than that. I was there when all it does is snow in South Bend, but we never had an issue where school was closed. Well, this year he's there, whatever year it was. They get this thing where you could walk on top of people's cars. It was that much snow. So they put the thing off a week, and they canceled school for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You see, the weird part is people are walking on people's cars. You come across a convertible, and you'd fall in, which wasn't good. So, of course, nobody can get everybody in the dorm, and nobody can get to the store. So he sells all the beer to people on campus at a nifty profit. So he already made a profit before the thing even started. So the weather clears, he buys another couple hundred cases. It's a now lower price. Anyway, these people love him. So it used to be Big Eight of accounting firms, right? Mm-hmm. So he gets an offer from all seven. Like, didn't get an offer from the eighth. This is back when people actually had some morals. Because the firm that was auditing my stepfather's firm didn't want to talk to him because they didn't want anybody close like that.
Because there was a gotcha.
Yeah. So he's getting offers, but I forget what the hell they were. They were like 14 grand, 13, 8, something like that. But it's a long time ago. So all of a sudden, I got a bunch of guys over playing ball in the backyard, basketball, we had a net, and the phone rings downstairs. This is back in the day before he had a cell phone, so some knucklehead brother, after a couple beers, answers the phone, and the guy goes, yeah, this is like Ernst and somebody, or one of those firms were.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, we interviewed your brother, we sent him an offer, and we sent him a bid of like 12,000. We realized that's a little low, so I went up it to 12,500. And I go, you better keep going. Everybody else is way higher than that. I goes, oh, really?
That's funny.
I go, well, that was my only time I got involved in somebody's. I think they did. They bumped it up. I don't know if he ended up going to work there or not, but he had choices of all seven. But remember when there was the Big Eight? What is there now, like four?
Two or three, maybe,
yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a big...
Like everything else. But, on the Sanders thing, he just... And there's been a lot of comparison to the Manning family and how Archie Manning was trying to direct where Eli was going to end up. But Eli showed up at the combine and did everything that he was supposed to do and showed up at the interviews and did everything. Now, maybe he didn't interview with San Diego.
Plus, he's a real bright kid. I mean,
and he's a bright, yeah, he's a super bright. Both of them are very bright kids. I feel like Archie Manning, and I grew up in the Southeast where Archie Manning was kind of a god, and I feel like
he was terrific.
Yeah, no, you know, Ole Miss and the Saints, and I grew up, you know, Memphis is
Ole Miss, and then busted knee.
Memphis
Central
is 70 miles up the road from Ole Miss, so it's our closest major, you know, closest SEC school is actually Ole Miss. I think they're four or five SEC schools that are closer than Tennessee to Memphis.
Really?
Like Missouri's close. If you turn Tennessee like straight up, Memphis is about as far from Knoxville as it is Chicago.
Wow.
So, but on the whole, You know, the Sanders thing and the Archie Manning thing, I don't think that's a decent comparison either, because I feel like if Eli had gone to one of the interviews and said, maybe I'm not the quarterback for your team, I think Archie would have gotten out the switch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is, yeah, if those of us in the South know what that means. But would have put him in his place. I think one of the reasons those guys are somewhat likable and humble is because of the dad they had.
Well, they come from a real strong family. I mean, you can tell. But, hey, I got a question for you. Uh-huh. This is pure speculation.
Uh-huh.
If Archie, for those who don't remember, Archie was one hell of a quarterback, and he went to the Saints, and they had no line, and he got his knees banged up. I don't think he was hurting.
And they play, and he played on turf back when
turf was horrible.
Scientifically, wasn't all that good.
It was
like concrete.
It had like a 3/8 inch of padding on concrete, essentially.
Yeah.
If he would have done the Elway thing and said, I'm not playing for the Saints, of course, it would be hard for him to do coming from the South.
But yeah,
if he said, I'm not playing for these guys, would he be in the Hall of Fame and hit a couple Super Bowl wins instead of Elway?
It may be, you know, all of that may have come from a lesson that he learned. You know?
Maybe that's what Elway was thinking about.
Yeah, that's very possible. So, on the Sanders thing, it really is, he just, you know, turned off people tremendously, and they watch you through the whole draft. You know, when you're at the combine, you're not just watched when you're doing stuff. They watch how you interact with other people, and he's walking around talking crap with other people at the draft. Like, and then he walked over to there's a great video floating around of him walking over to Cam Newton, who was chosen first. Saying, "Hey, let's do a rap." Let's do a rap together. And Cam goes, I'm a football player, I'm not here to sing.
Yeah, it's,
you know, that you just don't want that kind of distraction in your workplace. Would you want that kind of distraction in the PTI offices?
No. Can you imagine what
it's bad enough when I stop by?
Can you imagine what the kid is what's going through his mind? I mean, he seems like he's fractured here a little bit.
I think it's ruining him.
I hope it does.
I mean, if you have if I had a vision of, you know, showing up at Indiana and teaching in the fall, and you know, and three people show up in the classroom, and there are three people that, you know, have no interest in the topic I'm teaching, and it's just not what I expected at all, I'm gonna have a hell of a time, you know, putting on a happy face and teaching for the whole semester.
Yeah.
You know, and. Yeah, I think he's going to have a hell of a time putting on a happy face and being the in a five quarterback room. And if he were in maybe if lessons learned and he starts listening, my understanding is Cleveland has a couple of quarterbacks that are closer to my age than his age, and he could learn an awful lot.
Yeah, except that this is sports. I mean, why does it frost me when they talk about in the room? What the hell is a room? It used to be a locker room, whatever.
They have a quarterback room.
They have a tackle room.
They have separate rooms for, you know, the quarterback coach works with the quarterbacks, the receivers.
I know, but they don't have to tell anybody that. We got the tackle room. What is the tackle room?
It's the room where all the tackles are.
I get that. It's a great room.
You're in the same room with your internal competition on the team.
But I don't, you know, I guess I don't, to a certain extent, even though he's a terrific guy, I don't give a crap how much Roger Staubach manages to screw himself along the process. Once you got him out in the practice field, he's gonna be head and shoulders over the other four guys. If you're really that good, we're not talking about, you know, in some place where some guy from Harvard gets promoted over somebody else, even though the guy's an idiot. On a football field, it's pretty obvious who's better.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
And you say five is not a normal number. It's like three is a normal number.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that he's going to be a free agent. And part of me wonders if Cleveland drafted him to see if they could straighten him out and trade him off.
Well, maybe, but I mean, if you...
You know what I mean? In when Cleveland was interviewed about it, they just said, at a certain point, the potential value made sense to spend a fifth round pick on him.
Well, it goes back to somebody mentioned when the Cubs first signed Ernie Banks. Well, he's black and the rest of the team was white. I don't know if he was the first black guy, but if he wasn't, he was the second or third. And they asked some guy, well, when you signed him and he came out to spring training, did you notice him? And the guy goes, well, let's see. He was the fastest guy on the team. He had the best arm on the team, and he could hit the ball further than anybody else. Yeah, we noticed him. I mean, if he goes out there and the first play, he throws a 25-yard down and out like a mustard seed, I have a feeling everybody's going to start looking at him. You know what I'm saying? That's just the way sports is.
Yeah, and I, you know, he didn't, he, one of my schools is a Big 12 school. I got my PhD at Oklahoma State, so, you know, I can say something pseudo-derogatory about the conference. He did not play in the Big 10 or the SEC.
Right.
You know, oh, yeah. and like I just said, you know, a quarterback that, what felt like he was worth $4 million, which it'll be really interesting to see how that guy does in the draft. A quarterback who thought he was worth $4 million was the ninth best quarterback in the SEC when you took it, you know, take a look at the quarterback ratings, etc. You know, with that kind of competition, or even in the Big Ten, where would Sanders have ranked?
Well, you come down to everybody play on those other teams. Mm-hmm. It's a different speed level.
Yeah,
and if you've never played sports, you know. In fact, we played my last year I played softball. I was playing with some guy, and he's a big kid named Bubba. And he played center for, I think, Toledo or someplace. And they played against Buffalo. And who was the huge, big star defensive end that came from Buffalo? He's either was in the Hall of Fame recently or whatever. I don't know. But he's spectacular. And he goes, we played his Buffalo team. Is that if we sweep right, you know, the you know, whatever, the Packers sweep, if we sweep right, my job as a center is to you know, hike the ball, obviously, and I'm supposed to immediately pull back and make sure that if we're a little slow on the play, that, like, the defensive end from the other side can't come behind the play and catch it. So I pull back, and if the defensive end's going after the guy, I take a whack at him, basically, or block him. He goes, I hike the ball, I pull back fast, and the guy is already by me. This is the guy who's the NFL star. He goes, he was by me before I made the two steps back. He goes, that's how fast the guy was. And all of a sudden, everybody gets in the huddle. He goes, who the hell is that guy? I mean, it is so obvious sometimes. I mean, when you get to an elite player, it's not even close. I mean, you end up, I mean, I would think that the average, there's going to be some really good guys playing the league with Colorado or wherever the hell he played. But it's not like you're playing Alabama and Auburn every week where, I'm going to say, every safety there on average is a step faster.
Uh-huh.
So you just better deliver the ball just a little quicker, just a little something, because you're going to get your opportunities, but they're going to close in a nanosecond. And as people move up the chain of athleticism or of a ball, finally you get to the pros, and every guy, you know, is the best guy you ever saw in college. You know, and if you've never played sports, you don't even realize the difference between. I mean, it's a couple of guys who played. Who's the guy who played on all the Bulls teams, and he sometimes didn't even make the playoffs? Big black guy from the South Side. What the hell is his name? And he played.
You don't want to ask me names, man.
But he played in one of these leagues on the South Side in the summer, and they said the only way he can be on your team is if he doesn't shoot, because otherwise we got no chance. He could play defense. And that's how much better these guys are than, I mean, you say, hey, the guy on the end of the bench of the Bulls sucks. No, he doesn't. he's way better than the best player you've ever played against. I mean, it's scary how good these people are.
I mean,
hey, we got a few minutes before break. What, without going into any of the iterations, is everybody going to follow Kentucky down this lead? Where the LLC, and are they a principal Kentucky?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what's even better? Have you seen what's happening at Sacramento State?
No.
Oh, my gosh. They're going to be if I could bet online sports-wise, I would bet Sacramento State to make the Final Four next year.
In basketball?
Yep. They got Mikey Williams, who was a five-star prospect who had some legal problems. They just got him. They got Shaquille O'Neal's kid. And Shaquille O'Neal is going to be the GM for the program this year.
Why is that a positive? He's never done anything like that before, has he?
Yeah, but they're getting five-star prospects.
Okay.
that, you know, out of nowhere. So
what league do they play in?
They play in the Big Sky.
Really?
Yeah. I honestly, I keep thinking it's the moment, but I think this may be the moment that I quit college sports.
Well, I mean, I have a whole list of questions, and you just brought up another one. What if, in terms of if you and I pony up a bunch of money and grab five big time guys and put them at Chicago State and say we want to be in the Big Ten, or we want to be in the end? What stops us from saying, you know, well, you guys can't get in, you're not in a conference, you're not in there. Why can't we be at large in the NCAA tournament? I mean, the NCAA has lost all ability to make any rules, if you ask me.
Oh, I know they have. They get sued period. You know, if you don't like the rule, they get sued and they just give up on the rule.
Well, the Kentucky thing, I mean, everybody
it's a complete mess. Yeah, you know, I saw they were forming an LLC. And in reality, those things already exist. That's not new. So, you know, a lot of the NIL stuff is probably coming through LLCs. You know, maybe this one's the first one's associated with a school, but I don't think it's a game changer.
It's not associated. They are now the athletic department.
Yeah.
Well, that's way different than having somebody pay somebody.
Yeah, but it's like a separate business affiliate with the college. That
was is the college that's, at that's least the principal?
That's how athletic departments have been operating all along.
Well, but
I don't, you know, in each state has very unique rules with respect to their universities. This may be something that they have to do if they want to pay players or something like that. You know, I don't think this is some sort of innovative structure that's going to help them competitively.
But it appears that every sport is in there. The entire athletic department. So if it's a for-profit model, they may say, we're not flying the guy's swimming team somewhere for a match. Screw that. Well, we're not making money on that. But how does?
Of course not. Well, they already do that. They have that ability.
Well, but not really, because you've got, you know, the Title IX stuff, all kinds of stuff that people.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like football, basketball.
Well, but they have a million.
Well, that's
other...
another thing is you'll start to see. I really, when the economy went to hell in the 70s, you actually saw schools dropping football and stuff. I think that's going to be the same thing that you see now. I mean, I get beaten to a pulp by most of the people I grew up with what I'm about to say, but it probably would make sense for Memphis to drop football and just focus on basketball.
Well, probably.
They had success in football. They actually, you know, Memphis is not a major conference team. Both their basketball and football teams were ranked in the top 25 at the end of the year this past year. But that's still not going to be enough.
Well, that's my whole point. Most of these athletic departments don't make money.
It's well beyond most. It's
even
some of the SEC schools don't.
Well, I guess.
And you're already not making money, and now you got to start paying your players. Where is the money going to come from?
Well, they're already paying the coaches a boatload.
Right.
And so that's.
And then you got the Memphis's best basketball player left, and he's going to get $4 million somewhere else. I don't know where this $4 million number came from. But there are a lot of guys getting that much. And that's what Sanders got last year at Colorado. He's taking a pay cut to the NFL. That's the first.
Well, whenever anybody talks about this, is I'm always, you know, the knothead former cost accountant that I was. Who's writing that check? Is it the sponsor? Is it?
It depends on the situation, and it depends on the school. But it's changing. It was, you know, for a year and a half or so, it was alums going through maybe a collective or something like that. Now it's going to go directly through the school. They changed that rule.
I don't think that's there yet. They said schools. Let me try and take it. We got to go to break here in a minute, but let me take it from the top. Schools for the last 10 years have been able to pay what they call a stipend. Correct.
Yeah, and it's just a few $100.
Well, I thought some conferences are up to like $10,000 or something. But anyway, they pay them something. But still, it's not. It's considered something where you can't work in the dining hall or you can't do something. It's for the expenses that aren't covered by
the
scholar.
Hall. They don't even go in the dining hall.
I understand
They don't even go to the class.
I, the definition of it is are the ancillary expenses that somebody has going to college that because they're in practice all the time, they can't do something to meet. That was the – you don't want your football player not being able to afford a pizza in the dorm at night. Of course, I'm sure they don't have pizzas in the dorm anymore. But I'm saying that it was a number to even out because for a long period of time, when you went to – like Notre Dame got written up by the NCAA, and one of the offenses was – a guy didn't have, his uncle died, and one of the coaches gave him $50 for the Greyhound bus ticket. Mm-hmm. So a lot of your offenses were stuff like that, where you made kids wear a sport coat when they got on the bus somewhere else. The kid couldn't afford a sport coat, that kind of crap. So you had all these little tiny things that they said, okay, let's just pay everybody enough to where they can buy their own damn sport coat type of thing. So there's a stipend from the school, like you say, is very small. Then there's the chunk where, you know, some of the guys you've met here, they know people in the South Side where the kid's getting money in high school from somebody, yeah. Nike or whatever. Now, Nike is going to direct, well, I won't say direct, but they're going to make sure, I think, that he's going to go to some Nike school. I mean, he's sure as hell not going to go to an Adidas school, I don't think, or else he's going to blow his Nike thing. So now there's the guys at Notre Dame, the quarterback who's, you know, Hartman, we got all that money from Under Armour. Well, guess what? Under Armour's yeah. Notre Dame. So there's that chunk. Then there's the local people. They want you to show up at their pizza joint and sign autographs, and they'll pay you. There's that kind of crap. Then there's the more organized stuff. The people that want the kid to go to the hospital three nights a week and pay him $500 for going to the hospital, you know. And then they try and make that out. There's probably eight layers of this, and I don't know that the school, other than the stipend, really writes any of those checks.
Yes. That's the new rule.
Right. Now they can. But it still doesn't.
No, it's not can. They're being told they have to.
Okay,
by
but now,
their conferences.
All right, but now
it's not a can. They're
so,
being forced.
All right, so you're
to.
Saying that if Under Armour is going to give Hartman $500,000 a year, that money now has to flow through Notre Dame to Hartman?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, because now all of a sudden you're getting in.
And I don't know.
Well, now
I don't. I would assume that you can get paid by the school. And much like a professional athlete, and Under Armour can give them money as well. But the schools have to pay them out of the athletic revenues now.
Okay, well, come on.
And that can include donations. For instance, Tennessee how Tennessee decided to get the money to pay their players. Historically, Tennessee, you would pay $100 for a ticket to a football game or whatever. And that covered the tax and everything else. So
right.
You're... You know, before taxes, it was $90, and you paid $10 in taxes. And they're going to leave the ticket price the same, but they're going to make everybody responsible for their own taxes now. And that difference is what they're going to use to pay their players. But like the American Athletic Conference that Memphis is in has dictated that every team, every school in the conference within the next couple of years has to pay out $10 million in revenues to players.
Right,
and
hey,
then the schools get to figure out how to do it.
We got to go to break here, but did you spot this? U.S. economy shrunk 0.3% in the first quarter, so we're one quarter into a recession. S&P's are down 47, NASDAQ down 250. Talk about that when you get back. And I want to see what your vote would be on the board of directors on this. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief.
We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 53 now. NASDAQ futures down 270. We're sinking here as the U.S. economy shrank 0.3% in the first quarter. I think that was fairly unexpected. Dow's down only 89. We got a couple stocks in the Dow that are up. We got Sherwin-Williams up $1.40 and a few. Caterpillar's up $6.60. They had earnings. But yeah, we just I think this number kind of shocked everybody a little bit here. Let's go over to Europe and find out what they are doing. Now, these guys might not have reacted yet. Europe, DAX is up 77. It was up a lot more than that earlier. 0.3%. FTSE's only up 9 now, 0.1%. CAC round up 29.4. Over in Asia, these guys can't react because they're already closed. Nikkei's up 205.6%. Hang Seng up 111.5. Shanghai, which doesn't seem to be doing anything lately, is down 7.2%. Bonds. Moved now. The bonds moved up a little bit, 0.3 basis points, 4.20. They went down 2 basis points, 2.47. Oil down 66 cents now, under $60, 59.76. I don't think I would have guessed that. Good thing I'm not an oil trader. Brent down 75 cents, 63.50. Natural gas down a penny, 3.36. RBOB still at 206, but it's down from the 210 of the other day. It's coming down a little bit. We've got gold down 35 bucks. It was down more than that, but 32.98 is under 3,300. Silver down $1.10. That's a lot. 32.17. We've got foreign exchange. We'll see if this moves that at all. Not really. Euro's still at 114 and the British pound 133. So the dollar's still lower than it was, but not crazy today or anything. Crypto down 754, 94,601. It was actually up a little earlier. So this has changed things a little bit. Andrew, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
All right. It is 7:38 here in Chicago on Wednesday, April 30th. A little bit of sports here. The Cubs at 1 over the Pirates, 9-0. For Chicago weather, it is currently 48 degrees. It can have a high of 61. It's going to be cooler and variable cloudiness, it says here. We're going to have a slight chance of showers throughout the late afternoon. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 61 degrees. They're going to just have plenty of sun today. They're going to have a high of 90 degrees. And finally, for Chicago traffic, just got one accident to report here. That's on the left shoulder of the inbound Eisenhower. That's Laramie Avenue. I knew how to say that one. It's causing some small delays over there. Other than that, traffic is heavy on the inbound. But that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, I'll finish my last question for you on that subject, and then we got to talk about this, because obviously it's a big move here in the market. My question is, if all of a sudden everybody becomes employees. I was out with a client last night, and out of the blue, totally unprompted or whatever, he says to me, "You know, who's that guy I used to know at the East Bank Club? He was a Notre Dame Bear star, older guy." And I said, "You mean George Conner?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I saw him in the locker room, and his knees looked horrible." And I said, "Well, the guy's had like 25 surgeries after he quit playing football, none of them paid for by the Bears or the Notre Dame."
Yeah.
Now, when you go to the, we'll put you on the board of Memphis, we won't put you on the board of Indiana, and somebody says, "We're going to make these dudes employees or women or whatever," and somebody, and then you, I think, is the brilliant person that you are, you're going to say, "Now, wait a minute, what do we think our liability might be going forward with this?" And somebody says, "Well, we got 50 people that aren't thinking so well in their 30s that played football here, and we think they might have CEE or something. Where do you go with this? I mean, at some point, I mean, right now, everybody who has that, you know, Dave Durson's of the world. I know a couple people that actually, Doug Buffone is a friend of mine. There's a guy that I didn't know him, but a brother of a guy I knew real well from the trading store that I'm sure you know. I won't mention the name. It was a big family. I didn't know this one brother. He played at Penn, and I think he either played at Marist or Irwin Park High School, and he blew himself away when he's 40 something. And he checked his brain. Sure, he didn't know if he's got the CE. And of course, if you sued Penn, they're going to say it already happened at Evergreen Park High School or in grammar school or something. But someday, somewhere, somebody is going to be a track star, never played football in his life, plays for Notre Dame or Indiana, and never plays pro, and all of a sudden someday has this disease, and it's pretty hard to pin it on a high school or the pro, and the only thing he ever played is... Someday, somewhere, there's going to be that smoker that actually makes it through the process and is still alive. And the question is, do people really want that liability? Is it that big of a part of the school to where you're willing to take that on? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I
would like to think no, but unfortunately, there's this impression that you got to have a successful sports program to have an attractive university.
I promise. Last thing on this, everybody says that, Lou and everybody else. And you know what? I looked at Indiana over the last 20 years as a school that I pulled out of the hat. And because Indiana's had they got a nice sports program, but until last year, well, except for Bobby Knight years, I use the term unremarkable. I mean, it's not why you go to Indiana because they're a football team, although last year they were really good. And yeah. I'm sure they made a lot of money on selling Indiana jerseys and all that stuff, and I'm happy for them. I met a whole bunch of those people here in Chicago the night before the Notre Dame game. I tell you what, I never met a nicer group of people in my life. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the things I feel lucky to work there.
So I dug into doing research. You know, the guys on the show, I reserve the right to research on my own. Sure enough, the last 10 to 20 years, Indiana has been kicking ass on donations. And they're for the med school. They're for this. They're for that. I don't think they have anything to do with athletics.
It didn't. Actually, I'm gonna crush your bubble there. We had like the 100th anniversary of Kelly, and it was a massive fundraiser.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Kelly was one of the ones I was gonna mention.
there's a very generous family that has donated a lot of media. Like several schools have their own media studios, TV studio. Like the business school has its own TV studio now, because somebody donated a bunch of money for the different studios, and that again had nothing to do with the sports part. It's like something that attracts alums and gets them to come back to school.
Well, I think it's great.
A sporting event, yeah. But I think it's a major piece, but it's a piece of the whole puzzle.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
All right, hey, what's going on here? We're down 71.
We do this thing where the business school does a whole economic preview and everything else, and we give it out to everybody in the state, and we do free presentations around the state, et cetera. And I'm sure, I have Kelly graduates that'll come up to me at those events and just, gush about what a great place Kelly was and how much they appreciate.
Why is Indiana able to do, let's table that to next week. We've got these spoos down 70. NASDAQ futures down 335 now. Kenny was on the other day talking about how the market looks spectacular. And I've been talking about the signs of recession. I never dreamed this number was going to come out negative here, but it did.
No, I wouldn't have guessed either.
The question on the table with Kevin earlier, I don't know if you were listening, was we have this, excess of money into the system. We've got Trump's kids saying, careful of banks and regular currency. It's all going to be Bitcoin. I don't know where he's going with that, other than the fact that he owns some of that stuff. I hope we're not going to be another 1920s where we have some percentage of the population going one direction, everybody else the other, and all of a sudden there's this cataclysmic screw-up. But what is, I mean, I think that, the truce between Trump and Powell is we're right back on this 5.1% money supply growth, putting money in the system and inflating stuff up. But now, All of a sudden today, I think this number is a shocker. I really do. I mean, what does it mean? Is it a one-day buying opportunity, or what is it? Are they going to put more money in the system?
I think they're going to – well, I don't think it's going to be a one-day – I don't think we're going to trade off and then and rebound right back up. I do think there's more downside from here. And this might be the first what might be kind of frightening. And maybe this number shouldn't have been such a shock because – the most recent CPI number was slightly negative as well, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I've got this, I've got this weird theory that that the tariff may not be inflationary because food and energy prices won't really be impacted by it. I feel like that's a big portion of what we spend from year to year, or from day to day, period. So I guess, you know, the shrinking, this is the preliminary number. It's the first look. It's very possible that it could be revised in one direction or another. But it's not overly shocking. And at the same time, China creates a list of U.S. goods spared from the 125% tariffs. So it's very possible that some tariff news might offset the sell-off that we're getting right now. But we've got some fundamental issues, and the stock market is still relatively expensive. So I don't think it's a one-day buying opportunity. And we don't have one-day buying opportunities. We have like hour-and-a-half buying opportunities these days.
Well, I've been jousting with our other guests, and you're a professor, so grade me on this one. I look at tariffs, and again, I think it's amazingly complicated. I'm not going to talk about the stuff I did in school about it. Every product, every country, you got to work it through to find out who's paying what where. And like you say, the prices might not actually go up on the thing coming in, but maybe it's an opportunity for somebody here to raise. Whatever it is, you got to work its way through. But at the end of the day, Russell, and I think their numbers are wrong, the administration has estimated, and by the way, debt clock has gone along with them, that they're going to collect $600 billion this year in tariffs. Now, I think that they're going to end up cutting some deals with some people and all this other stuff. And I'm going to say the number, maybe it's half that, or maybe it's 400. But it's going to be something. And somebody has to pay it. And the consumer is going to end up paying it. To me, it's very similar that if the state says, we're going to raise the sales tax from 7 to 9, but don't worry, somebody else will eat it, or something along those lines. Somewhere, someplace, somebody's going to pay more because somebody has to change and send his check to the government. And it may be a little less than we think. It may be something. It may be some of it might be eaten by the producer overseas. Some of it might be eaten by the guy here. But the fact is, that $400 billion is coming out of somebody's pocket. And to say at the end of the year the prices haven't gone up at all, I can't buy that. There's no way. That it's like a sales tax. Everybody's not going to eat this 2% and give it to the government. Somebody's going to eat it, right?
Well, what if people just buy less plastic crap from China?
Well, I'm saying that, okay, but then they got to.
and if anybody tells you that the tariffs are hitting, you know, that the tariffs are hitting us harder than they're hitting China, they're lying to you. Because I've got a friend who lives in Hong Kong. He sent me a video that he took of goods that are supposed to be on planes flying out of Hong Kong, lining up on the expressway, like people park on the, you know, park on the side of the road at O'Hare when they're picking up somebody that's running late. It's 2 miles of crap.
But let's make a distinction. But if you agree, I'm not saying it's not affecting them. It is. But they're not paying it. We are.
We're not paying it either because they're just not sending anything here.
Okay. Well, I guess.
And you're familiar with Temu, right?
Yeah. Well, so, as in the last couple of days. But
Temu, you can go on there and you can buy something for like $15, $20. And then after you go to, when you go to check out, they actually will show you, they actually put the tariff on there and it's more than the item that you paid for. And so everybody's canceling
let me ask you the math here. If the tariffs, what is it? Well, what are tariffs in China, I guess, are what, 100 and some percent now, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well then, but I'm saying if we put a huge tariff on Rolls Royces, which is the only one you and I are going to buy, I guess we could say it's not a problem because I wasn't buying a Rolls anyway, but somebody's buying it. or not. But I'm saying,
I mean, the thing, and maybe I'm being a home teamer because I really do want to punish the crap out of China, because I feel like they deserve it for the way that they've treated us for some time, and we're just as responsible. It's like one of those fool me once, fool me twice things. Those guys have been fooling us for 20 years, and no wonder, you know.
Okay, but what do you mean by those guys? Some people here have been more than happy to pay off the politicians to use child labor. We're the guys.
Oh, I know.
I mean, they afforded the opportunity, but our guys grabbed it.
But at the same time, Tesla busts their butt, gets into China, they steal all their tech, and now China's very competitive in electric cars.
Yeah, well.
So, you know, shame on Tesla for doing that. Shame on any company that, you know, shame on Boeing for having to share all. You've brought this one up multiple times. Boeing, you know, they outsource part of the planes to China, but China would only do it if they would give them the full plans.
Yeah, I think
so. China could try to copy our planes. They haven't really been able to, but try to at least.
Boy, I tell you what, though, you and me, all the Boeing plans for a 787. I don't think we can build one. I don't think China can either.
I don't think anybody can. You got to go out to Seattle and see the Boeing factory sometime. It's just unbelievable.
Did you happen to listen last week? Lou was not here, so I had my actually lifelong friend Bill Moriarty. Have you ever heard him?
Yeah.
He was on last week talking about China. And how he was over there, and Bill's a civil engineer, and his strong point is water treatment facilities. But, you know, he learned enough about water to know what is, and, you know, he could design a road for you if he asked him to, that kind of thing. But he said over there, because I was asking him about China was saying that they were going to kick out essentially consultants and so forth. And we have a lot of stock here that we manage for people, ACN, Accenture, which is gone down quite a bit since all this started, and they're obviously a major consulting firm. And Bill's opinion was that, hey, if they're building a dam and they want to kick all the people out from here, he said maybe some guys in Europe, but if you want to kick all the American, you know, engineering firms out, he goes, that dam's not going to look so hot. our expertise, you might be able to kick out the accounting firm or something, or the law firm, but you're not going to. These major engineering projects, there's only some people that can do those things, and you can't boot out all the engineers in the middle of a refinery build or a coal plant build. I mean, you can't, because I wouldn't want to be near it when you turned it on. You know, he said the expertise is just not there. We don't have anywhere near the respect for how much people in this country and in Europe to a certain extent how good we are at this stuff. I mean, it was a very refreshing interview. I mean, it was,
and we've got a ton of what I would refer to as institutional knowledge doing these things.
Yes,
you know, and that just comes from experience.
Well, I never forget when I drag him out to Vegas with me. Right, this is Bill. I told Bill's story, mm-hmm. And I said, "Hey, how would you like to go out?" You know, and this is when he was you know, a young civil engineer, and he goes, "Hey, how would you like to go to Hoover Dam? I'd love to go out there." I never saw a guy more fascinated in my life with the concrete work. And he goes, you see how good this is? This is unbelievable. This thing is how many years old? There's not a pit in this stuff.
And you want to hear something really funny? The Chinese really started getting modern and everything in 1990, and they make this cheap-ass concrete, and 30 years in, it's all starting to crumble.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd want to go over a bridge over there.
But he goes, No water gets under this thing. Nothing gets around it.
It's an absolute marvel that it's still standing there, considering what it's fighting against nature-wise.
Yeah. He goes, absolutely. He goes, the guys who did this were unbelievable, and the workmanship is spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
I had been there a couple times, but I had no it looked incredible to me, but mm-hmm. He says, this kind of workmanship is something that is just... You're talking in a depression, for God's sake?
Yeah. I mean, you would think they would be trying to manage costs to a certain point.
Well, yeah, and he said, but this is, but he goes, the research went into the concrete itself, into the expansion and contraction joints, and how the thing is not contracted or expanded more than mm-hmm. anybody thought. He goes, there's so much into that, And for something to happen, you know, like an initial type of thing this big, to know exactly how much. Do you know when they built the thing, they left a big chunk in the middle open because they wanted it to be able to expand without cracking, and then they filled that in like half a year later or something?
No, I did not know that.
I mean, he goes, all that stuff where guys just did this because they had a feel for it and you know, maybe had little sample things they did. He goes, just the idea of water always wants to get under a dam. Just the idea of how far you had to go down, how you had to make sure you got into the bedrock that nothing could move it. He goes, that was all revolutionary, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, people don't have this skill set around the world.
No, they don't. And the people that do have the skill set outside of the United States, a lot of them have picked it up here.
Oh, yeah. So,
you know, that's why you send somebody to a, you know, if you're doing it for the right reasons, that's why you send somebody to the United States to go to college.
I would agree. We got 5 minutes, and we're not going to tell people, give you know, information. But what is this? Is the economy going to clash with asset prices at some point here?
I don't know about a crash, but I easily see, you know, well, like
I said clash.
Well, most definitely. Yeah, asset prices are too high right now. There's no question on that.
Can it be a gradual 10% down, and everybody gets a little bit wages, and prices stay where they are? I'm not going to say they're going to go down, and we somehow. I'm still in the camp. Mm-hmm. I don't know what percentage I can give it. That if you and I were in charge, we would lower money supply growth down to about 1%. Hope wages went up 2.5, and try at the end of 5 years to be in a way better place. Some other people on the show and I are convinced that there's no way that happens, that these prices have to come down dramatically because they're up 40% with people's income up 10. And somehow you need a serious jolt out of the money supply, the stock market and everything to come back to even. I'd like to see we could go around without that happening. What do you think? What do you think? Does it have to be convulsive? I hope not.
I don't think it has to be convulsive. I think it can be short-term painful, and the only issue with it being, or you know, maybe even intermediate-term painful. The only real problem in my mind with that one is we've got a big portion of the country that is already feeling the kind of pain that you would associate with what you're talking about over the long term. Well, you know, I mean, they're already living check to check. I'll give it. And some people are living check to check that have no business doing the things they're doing. You're familiar with the Coachella thing, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, 60% of the people that bought tickets from Ticketmaster did it on a payment plan.
I didn't hear that part.
Absolutely. If one of my kids did that and then came to me and asked for rent money or something, I would lose it.
You'd lose it, but then you'd pay him.
I can't make my car payment this month. You were at Coachella. What do you mean you can't make your car payment?
Or you can't.
I can't make my car payment because I'm making my Coachella payment.
Well, you can't use your own little coffee cup in the morning. You got to pay $8 at Starbucks or whatever.
Yeah, that too. You know.
Well, it's
amazing.
Know,
it's amazing how quickly if people really like sit down and look at the essentials in life. And then the nice to haves, the have to haves. Period. I think we can all, you know, agree that too many of us are doing things with things that they don't need.
Well, I agree with you, but
we've become very spoiled that way.
But I got to ask you, as a professor.
I mean, do I need 15 cardigans? No.
You got 20.
I've lost weight. I had to throw something.
You look good last time I saw you. You look real good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, what do you make of? I talked to Nancy was on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And you being a professor, and I'm not asking you to take a shot at your students or anything.
Oh, I will.
But
it's the end of the semester. I'm sick of them.
but I was asking her is well for a while there was no refis, right? Because but now she says I'm starting to do some refis. Some of them are positive, where people got a mortgage 2 years ago, maybe it was from a divorce or something.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get them a really good rate because their credit thing was crummy. And I asked them, I gave them a program on how to get their credit card up, credit rating up. And now they're coming back to me and I'm able to get, now that they're all fixed, I'm able to get them a mortgage a lot cheaper. So I'll put that in the good news category. The bad news is people have a 3% mortgage and all of a sudden And I'm going to be nice and say maybe it was a medical event, it was a car transmission, God knows what. But their credit card balance is now so high that even though they're paying 3% on the mortgage for, say, $150,000, they're paying 30% on the credit card for $50,000. So it's better for them. So they can actually do the refinance. So I said, Nance, when you go through that for them, she goes, I have to explain this all to them. I said, Nance, we're talking about people that allegedly went to high school, college. I mean, we're not talking about ditch diggers, which is nothing wrong with being a ditch digger.
Mm-hmm.
I said, does anybody have any idea other than you of the math? I mean, I could have done that in eighth grade. You know, I mean, we're talking about a simultaneous equation here, right?
Yeah.
When what's the break even of X at 3% versus X at 30%?
Yeah.
And she goes, I have to actually get out a piece of paper and start from the top. Nobody has any idea what I'm talking about. I said, are these college educated adults? Yes.
Yep.
What the bleep?
I know. We really should teach personal finance in high school.
But this is math. And this is simple math.
At Indiana, there's a 1 hour personal finance class that anybody can take. You know, like if I'm going to get the number of hours wrong, so don't quote me on this one. But let's say if you pay full tuition, that's anything from 15 hours and above. If you pay full tuition and you're only taking 15 hours, you can take some 1 hour mini type classes, and one of them's personal finance, and it's 100% online. And if you do that, you get to see like 36 hours of Professor Rhodes videos. I actually teach that one, but I feel like that one should actually be offered in high school as well.
How does Joe and Judy have a $150,000 mortgage at 3%? The current rate on a mortgage is 7%. Their credit card rate is 30%. How much does a credit card rate have to get up to where it's break even on the change? How does anybody not be able to do that?
You should be able to do that quite easily. But I've invoked my sister down in Memphis, who I bought a condo for.
Okay.
And buying the condo was based on the payments. And she was just so impressed that I could get my financial calculator out and kind of figure out what the payments would be.
Well, pretty scary,
now,
I guess.
A lot of people can't do that. But if you can break it down to monthly payments for people, I think that is what resonates with them.
Well, we've had the last days since last week, really, since I'm going to fire Powell, and no, I'm not going to fire Powell, we've done nothing but go straight up for probably 5 days in a row. Is this a game changer today, or just a one-day blip?
I think it's one day. Well, no, I don't think it's necessarily a game changer. I think it's kind of confirmation of what a lot of people felt would happen, which was the economy there would be some disruption in the economy. We saw it with a negative CPI that everybody kind of discounted or did discount based on what we're going through right now. And I wonder if this is going to be blown off a bit by as potentially temporary and transitory.
Well, I did not.
If I hear the word transitory
from
somebody on TV, I'm going to double down on my short.
I thought you were going to say you're going to be an Elvis and shoot the TV.
Well, no, I don't want to do that.
No. So. It's bad on TVs. SP Futures down 73. NASDAQ Futures down 360. Russell has great. Good to hear. Oh, by the way, how are the dogs?
Dogs are good. There's two applications for Poppy to be adopted. She's maybe on the way out.
This is the one you've had forever?
We've got a forever one, and we've got one that we're fostering right now. And
I thought you had two forevers.
We have two. We have three dogs in the house
total. Okay, I thought you had a beagle and a...
I got a beagle, and I've got a French bulldog, and then we've got we do stuff for the French bulldog rescue, and we've got one that they found on the side of the road. We've gotten her cleaned up. She's living a great life, and pretty soon she's going to be living a great life at somebody else's house.
Well, you got the one who was supposed to die, and she didn't read the memo.
Yeah, she's 3.5 years in now. Aren't you, bad boy? Yeah.
And he's so
funny. I'm trying to adopt both of them out together, but I'm getting a lot of pushback in the house.
That's not even going to happen. No, it's not. You could go with the other dog sooner than the dog.
Yeah, I think they probably would go with that. If I go anywhere, man, and a dog disappears, it's the beagle.
Oh, God.
That's my baby.
SP Futures down 76. The SP Futures down 373. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.